2015. And this is Webster Tarpley speaking to you from the nation's capital, Washington, D.C. Now, we have a big program. Two things are going on in the background this Friday afternoon. First is the crucial hearing that's being held in the county courthouse of Berrien County, Michigan, where there are going to be some motions made in favor of Reverend Edward Pinckney, who is the premier political prisoner in the United States at this point, in my opinion, someone whose case is going to be more and more important on the international level if he is forced to stay in jail. But we're hoping that Reverend Pinckney will be freed this afternoon. This could be the judge saying, I erred. I didn't read the law carefully. It's actually the case that some kind of an irregularity with a petition for a recall election, that's actually a misdemeanor, isn't it? That's not a felony. So there's no reason for jail time. And the other possibility is that he could be freed on bail pending appeal. And remember that Reverend Pinckney has been kept in the American Siberia, right? Marquette, Michigan, on the UP, the Upper Peninsula. This was one of the coldest places in the United States several days lately. You follow it, right? Take a look sometime when there were these cold snaps, right? The polar vortex hits there harder than just about any place else. So this is one side. And then we've got, at the same time, we're following the course of the approval of the deal, the modus vivendi, right, the short-term compromise between between Greece and the European Commission. So we're going to be going into that. So we want to get the update, obviously, from Michael Chiotinis in Athens. So lots going on, and we want to see whether the reactionary Republicans are really going to shut down the Department of Homeland Security over this fit of racist, xenophobic pique that they've been acting out, that they hate foreigners so much that they're not only are they willing to sabotage the U.S. workforce for the 21st century. That doesn't mean anything to them. But they're willing to put their own heads on the chopping block. Because believe you me, if those reactionary Republicans shut down the Department of Homeland Security and anybody gets killed in terrorism, that blood really will be on the hands of those Republicans. And certainly in the news cycle, they will be torn to pieces. And, well, this might be a possible scenario for doing what has to be done, getting rid of the Republican Party, sweeping them aside as a possible contender for power, letting them dwindle despite all the money from Koch and all the money from Sheldon Adelson and all the money from the rest of these plutocrats and optimates. The Republicans, kind of like the Federalists, right? The Federalists back during the War of 1812, when the Federalists became the party of treason, and of embracing the British while the British were waging war on the U.S. That was the end of the Federalists. And that is what might be awaiting the Republicans. And there are many ways, many paths that come to this conclusion. But one of them is they shut down the Department of Homeland Security and then something happens. And that's something, you know, who knows what that is. But in the real world, the way it unfolds, that might be the signal for the Republicans to collapse into that regional, rural, racist, reactionary, xenophobic political formation, which they are, and it would be clear to all. They would have collapsed quite a while ago if it hadn't been for these monster boxcar infusions of money from the Koch brothers. Koch, K-O-C-H, spells Koch in any man's language. Or anybody's language. Now, the Greece has gone through this process now of renegotiating a 4-month bridge arrangement so that the Greeks continue to get cash liquidity from the European Central Bank. And obviously this had to be negotiated. There are some compromise points. There are principally some of the things that Syriza wanted to do, raise the minimum wage and a few other things. Those have been, let's say, delayed. However, this is, if you take a look at this interesting document, right, you can find it on Reuters. You can find it on my Twitter feed, Webster G. Tarpley. Just look down the page and you'll find it. This is what was submitted then last week, last Friday, I guess, and that was done by Varoufakis. You're going to see the points of creative ambiguity, that there are quite a number of those points which can be read in a number of ways. And I think there's an interview with Varoufakis online where he says, well, I got advice from people who know the European bureaucracy, right? They know the European Central Bank, and they said, why don't you keep this a little bit vague? So those points are essentially now open. And I urge you, you know, you remember in quite a few languages to be Byzantine, to be part of that older Greek formation. To be Byzantine means that you're a master of creative ambiguity, right? You're flexible. You're ductile. And with those things, you can do a lot. And I must submit that in a contest between Merkel and Schäuble, with their somewhat stolid and somewhat wooden cognitive apparatus, and these Greeks like Tsipras and Varoufakis, I have an idea who's likely to come out on top when the terrain shifts to creative ambiguity. I think it's the Greeks. And we even have other, we have a number of ways that this could go on. But let's just get to the first point. The anarchists, okay? Black Bloc, or whatever they called themselves this year. Remember, anarchists, in the sense that you find anarchists in the street, as distinct from, say, literary anarchists. There used to be this guy, Murray Bookchin, who was a, you know, an entertaining writer, and he could, you know, he had a good act, and it was entertaining. But when you find anarchists dressed in black in the streets, those are more likely than not, more often than not, police agents, provocateurs, wreckers. And sure enough, as soon as the deal starts to go through, the anarchists show up in downtown Athens, 450 anarchists. I'm sure they were brought in from quite a number of places. I can think of a number of countries. Germany has a pool. Italy has a pool. I'm sure they were brought in, or some of them were. And they start burning some cars and smashing some shop windows. That is not a sociological phenomenon. Repeat, not a sociological phenomenon. It is not authentic. It is a grand guignol. It's a farce run by intelligence agencies, right? And this is a provocation. But, of course, every news organ in the world shows you these same tired, discredited, hated anarchists coming out and burning somebody's car. So those out and outside agitators. So do not be confused. The presence of those people means exactly nothing. Back in a minute on World Crisis Radio. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. Webster Tarpley here in Washington, D.C., and we're following the process by which the Greek government, the Syriza government, is maneuvering and outmaneuvering the Merkel-Schäuble combination. I think they have essentially been the losers. That is the German side, not even German, but the Deutsche Bank side, the Ackermann, Schäuble, and Merkel. side. They have been outmaneuvered in the sense that today we had the vote in the Bundestag, the German parliament, and this is now the deal that was submitted by Varoufakis and company has gone through the Bundestag. 542 votes yes, a number of votes no. Just about everybody in the CDU, Christian Democratic Union, that's Merkel, and the SPD, the so-called social democracy, Steinmeier, the foreign minister, being one of those guys, and that other guy, Gabriel, the deputy prime minister, they have voted for it. Then you had Schäuble whipping the votes. Schäuble going around and arm-twisting some of the more extreme xenophobes, the Fremdenhasser, who have this idea that Greeks are lazy and that Greeks are greedy. Isn't that picturesque? But it went through. However, 29 defections, let's say, 29 of the members of the German parliament broke party discipline and have voted against it. Okay. So, again, thanks to Schäuble for whipping the votes. So remember, even the name of this is disputed, right? Is it the continuation of the bailout, the continuation of the austerity program, or the continuation of the financial aid program? You've got to have a period where you can find out what the financial situation of the Greek state is, because under Samaras, of course, it was very, very hard to know this. And remember, all the measures in favor of the 300,000 families, the electricity, the food stamps, the restoration of medical services, the 30,000 homeless families get all that, and any number of other things, right? The cleaning ladies were rehired at the finance ministry. The people from the Greek state broadcasting apparatus are in the process of being rehired. So there are quite a few things that are going on, and you're going to find any number of points where the wording is going to be redirected, or it's going to be reinterpreted through this wonderful principle of creative ambiguity. And we even have some of the people who are putting on a big show of indignation, I think, have carefully calculated what they're doing. I think the energy minister is Lafazanis, and he says, I don't like this deal. I'm not going to be bound by it. So that's already a beginning, a way to do this, right? Now, Greece also says they will honor their financial commitments for the next 4 months. So they're not going to declare a unilateral debt moratorium in the next 4 months. However, what can we say? The infantile leftist, right? The infantile disorder of leftism, especially rife among Maoists, Trotskyists, and Marxists of the British school, right? Remember, Marxism is a British creation, and it has been. So a lot of people not happy. The general idea is this. Think of that old, the Italian group from the 1960s and 70s, Lotta Continua. Lotta Continua was Maoist, spontaneous, had all kinds of names. But their favorite slogan was, well, they had a number. One of them was called La Spesa Proletaria, proletarian shopping, which meant go to the supermarket and shoplift what you want with a five-finger discount. But the other slogan they had was Vogliamo tutto e subito. We want everything and we want it now. I'm sorry, from the anarchists of Kronstadt, who just about sold out the main port to the British and the French, to the anarchists that we've seen in so many situations, this instinct is, of course, very, very destructive. You can't have everything, and you can't have it now. Or above all, you can't have everything now, right? You may be able to get some combination of it, but not now. So this is the idea. I just saw I'm afraid the Russian television RT is they're very ambiguous. They're very, what can I say, unreliable on this thing, right? They give equal time to the enemies of the deal. Because remember, the enemies of the deal are the ones who want to wreck the euro. That is to say, all the British devotees of the pound, all the U.S. devotees of the dollar, who want to essentially smash up Europe and loot it for the greater glory of Goldman Sachs. And it all goes back to that idea dinner at Moness, Crespi, and Hart in the spring of 2010, when they sat around with a Soros representative and said, how can we attack the euro? We can't do it frontally. A trillion a day is too much. But what we can do is attack the state bonds of the smaller peripheral countries. And that's the pigs, right? The Portugal, Italy, well, Italy, quite a large one, but Ireland, Greece, Spain, and so forth. Spain also a rather big one, but you get the idea. And that's what they did. And that was even investigated by the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. But the answer was they found nothing. Of course, they moved on because this was a high level intelligence operation. So you're going to see now. The other thing is that the German decision is all the more remarkable. The Bild Zeitung is one of the most scurrilous and horrendous tabloid newspapers in the world. And it comes from the Springer Verlag, right? Axel Springer or Springer, one of the more extreme people that came out of the Cold War. So the headline on Bild Zeitung yesterday was 9 huge no Greeks are greedy. Boy, how dumb can you get? That money went into the pockets of Deutsche Bank. Can't you figure that out? The Greeks never saw a penny of that. This was simply a bailout disguised in this xenophobic cloak of trying to blame Athens for what Deutsche Bank, Goldman Sachs, and the idea dinner at Moness, Crespi, and Hart, it's all written up on Tarpley.net, what all of that had represented. So, in some ways you can see what's going on psychologically. It's a kind of a echo, or indeed a second or third echo, of the National Socialist period, the war, the Marshall Plan, and so forth. Anyway, the point is, it's absolutely self-destructive. It's really stupid, and it should stop. It has to stop. Back in a minute on Gold Prices Radio. Gold Prices Radio here, and it's the afternoon of Friday, the 27th of February 2015. We wanted to point out that we've got some demonstrations going on. I'll give you the specs on the demonstration. Anti-Whirlpool and pro-Pinkney, in addition to what's happening with the demonstrations today in the area of Berrien County or Barbarian County. But let's look at what else is going on. This week we had the celebration of Armed Forces Day in Russia. It is specifically the day of remembrance for the defenders of the fatherland. There was a very nice reception at the Russian embassy here in Washington, D.C. I was fortunate enough to attend. I represented the Tax Wall Street Party and the United Front Against Austerity. I did not see other political formations of this type represented there. And that's as it should be, because this broadcast and the UFAA and the Tax Wall Street Party are indeed powerful forces for detente, for war avoidance, and for various forms of cooperation with Russia. So we want to honor the role of the Russian and Soviet armed forces, obviously in the Second World War, where as a historian, the only possible conclusion is that it was the Red Army in particular that bore the brunt of the fighting. The only thing we can add to that, I think, is that a lot of the equipment was manufactured in the United States. But in terms of the human losses, it's just beyond all comparison. And since I had given now the Russian fleet's lecture of September 21st, and 2013, right, looking back to the events of September 21st, 1863, 150 years earlier, I was able to donate or to give a couple of copies to a number of the personnel of the Russian embassy, again, thanking them for what Russia had done for the United States back in the Civil War. And I've actually found that there was perhaps a number of them who said, well, you know, this was all well and good, but America would still be America. And I'm afraid no. If you put the combination of the Confederate forces together with the British and the French, and even the Spanish, who would have been part of such an adventure, maybe vis-a-vis Florida, let's say, or something like this, then it is not at all clear that the United States could have survived in any recognizable form. The only thing we can say on the other side is that if we had witnessed the British and the French invading the Union, it's also quite possible that Russia would have intervened on land as a matter of self-defense, and there might have been then a world war under those conditions. It would unquestionably have been a world war. So thank you to the Russian forces. Now, the other thing is the project that is associated with Professor Stephen Cohen is the American Committee for East-West Accord, and we are told that this is in the process of being formed. And we want to thank Professor Cohen. We want to thank Katrina VandenHeuvel of The Nation for doing this, right? They have an enviable ability to put this together. I believe other academic representatives like Professor Mearsheimer of the University of Chicago, they are part of the effort as far as we know. We certainly hope so. We have just two, really comes down to one, actually, one important suggestion. Don't just create the organization. Do it with a big international conference that will impact the media and public opinion and help people who are interested in war avoidance, detente, and cooperation rather than the lunatic neocons and humanitarian bombers. Have an event, right? And the organizing process for that event will already begin to shift U.S. Public opinion. So this is the imperative of peace. The Minsk II is in the process of being applied now. It was delayed by the fact that there was the Debaltseva pocket, as we've outlined in earlier broadcasts, and the Debaltseva pocket was a kind of a gap left in the Minsk II because the demagogue Poroshenko had refused to admit that his forces were in fact surrounded, pocketed, encircled, bottled up. He said, no, that's not true. So for a couple of more days of being in denial, how many lives did he sacrifice? Right? Obviously the order should have been given to get out of there months ago. But no, just like Hitler at Stalingrad, refused to face reality, refused to order a retreat. Well, from Poroshenko to Hitler and back again. So there it is. That part is now over. So you can see things are getting back to normal. There may be other thrusts. Who knows? And again, fundamentally, this is not our affair. We're over here in the United States or Western Europe, and especially in the light of the sacrifices made by the Soviet and Russian peoples in World War II, they deserve a sphere of influence where violently anti-Russian regimes simply cannot be tolerated. And the United States would say the same thing about Mexico or Canada, and they've done it about Cuba, right? After 50 years of hysteria over Cuba, that is finally now being dismantled. So, it's 1 year since this illegal coup on the Maidan. What can we say? The U.S. media is all focused on, will Russia and the pro-Russian forces violate Minsk II? Not a word about the fascists, Yarosh, Right Sector, Tyanibok, the rest of these killers. not a word about them. And it's just, it's embarrassing. It's Orwellian. Okay. So, we wanted to point out the role of the German Green Party, right? One of the most extreme Russophobic political operations in Western Europe, and in particular their leader, Rebecca Harms, who is, she gives herself no rest, right? She's an implacable, person looking for confrontation with Russia. And therefore we invite Jill Stein and any other leaders of the U.S. Green Party that want to be taken seriously to repudiate the pro-NATO provocations of this Rebecca Harms, who is a menace to peace in Central Europe. And if you think the Middle East is sensitive, you ain't seen nothing yet. You're getting some idea of how sensitive that area in Eastern Europe, right? Mackinder's so-called heartland, how important and how sensitive that is. So Green Party, back off on the anti-Russian hysteria. Now, the other point, of course, for Jill Stein is Netanyahu is now coming to town. This goes far beyond her. But Netanyahu's visit is an affront to the United States. It is an affront to the sovereignty of this country. And above all, in terms, apart from the formalism, Netanyahu's position is he does not know what the outcome of the U.S.-Iran negotiation might be, but he wants to sabotage it no matter what it is. So in a sense, Netanyahu's position is to say, I don't want there to be any deal between the United States and Iran, and I'll sabotage it. And of course, the alternative to a deal is likely war. So in that sense, Netanyahu puts the U.S. with Iran, as Victor Bushin pointed out. Back in a minute. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. Webster Tarpley here in Washington, D.C. Let me just give you a program note. Saturday, February 28th, there will be a boycott Whirlpool action in New York City at Home Depot, 980 3rd Avenue and 59th Street. Home Depot, 980 3rd Avenue, 59th Street, New York City. Boycott Whirlpool, Maytag, Amana, KitchenAid, until and unless Reverend Pinckney is freed and cleared of all charges. So there we go with the constant pressure on Whirlpool, largest appliance manufacturer in the world. Now, we've been looking forward to hearing from our observer and friend in Athens, Michael Chiotinis. This has been a big week. So Michael, you take it away and proceed as you think best. I do have some questions, but why don't you give us the overview?
Okay. Well, firstly, we have to, I suppose we have to talk about a bit, we have to talk a bit about, the deal between Greece and the Eurogroup.
Right.
And the famous Varoufakis list of reforms.
Right.
It has gone through extreme criticism from every political force to the left of Syriza, but also from right-wingers, whose hysterical, rhetorical, they jump between the type of rhetoric that says Syriza is making a U-turn and is therefore one and the same with the old government. That's one type of rhetoric. And the other type is Syriza are a bunch of dangerous Eurosceptics who bring catastrophe. And the funny thing is they're going back and forth between the two rhetorics in a psychotic manner. No one can, many times in the same statement. So that's funny. The thing is, the right wingers have lost their meaning for existence. Their political existence is mostly useless, demonstrably, because even if the complete program of Syriza is implemented, things are going to the right direction, at least. And there is an end to austerity. Now, I have to talk a bit about the deal. First, there are some bad things. There's the main bad thing is there's a danger, as I see it, of legitimizing the legal framework of the old bailout, a legal structure not seen even in colonies or these kind of situations. But I don't know what they are very careful in the way that they are constructing the deal, but there is this danger of legitimizing the legal framework. Now, the good thing is that it buys time. It stops further austerity, and it gives you the opportunity for Syriza to show that there is another way of doing things. And there may be another way for Europe as well. Now, in this agreed list of reforms, there we have the half of the Salonika program of reforms. Some say this is the old memorandum. It's not. It demonstrably isn't. Don't forget that it's only for the next 4 months. So, of course, it's not going to be all the complete Syriza program. It's about half of it or one third. Now, built in this list, because anyone can read it in different ways. Many people can read it differently.
The word is creative ambiguity, I believe, from Varoufakis.
Yes, creative or constructive ambiguity. Now, this constructive ambiguity serves, in my view, two purposes. The first is there are no specific numerical targets, because a country is not a company. Okay, things go as predicted. Some things go as predicted. Other things don't. And the finance minister Varoufakis said to the Eurogroup, "Well, I want to make promises that I can keep, because Greece needs to regain its credibility. And how can I regain credibility if I promise something that I cannot deliver? Because I'm not it's a country. It's not a company." And the second purpose, I think, is that it leaves space for stretching of the interpretations, so that Mr. Schäuble, for example, can pass it through the parliament, having the rhetoric by the infamous newspaper Bild. Now, today Tsipras has announced the legislative initiatives that will come to Parliament, voted and passed into law during next week. And there are four legislative initiatives. Let me tell you a bit about this.
Four bills.
First, food and electricity for 300,000 households, as promised. A housing program for 30,000 homeless families, as promised. The second bill includes the clearance of debts owed to the public. It will include a haircut on debts that cannot be repaid, and a kind of settlement, a up to 100-month plan to repay the rest in such a way that the installments represent a certain small percentage of the taxpayer's income, so that he and his family can survive with the remaining income. Such an agreement is also coming during the next weeks for debts to the banks. So that's the second one. The third one is a complete moratorium on foreclosures on primary residence. And the fourth is for the old public television reinstituted, all employees hired back, and those kind of things.
Right.
Now, measures that are delayed during these 4 months. Let's not forget the deal is about 4 months. The first is the reinstitution of the tax-free income bracket. There's nothing about that. There used to be a tax-free income bracket for small incomes. Of course, gone under the IMF policy, and they're not reinstituting that right now. The second one is the restoration of the minimum wage where it was 3 years ago. This is very important, and I'm not happy about that, but it will be delayed for maybe a year or more, or at least for these 4 months. The third delayed bill is not bill, subject is the haircut of the public debt. It's part of the negotiations anyway, beginning from this point on. Although the Speaker of the Parliament is putting together an audit committee for the public debt. I don't know if this will help, but it certainly is a step in the right direction. Also, the Finance Minister, of course, says clearly, you know, in every way that the debt is not viable. It's not, we cannot, service this debt. It has to, something has to be done. But it needs to be part of the negotiation. And the main thing, the fourth thing that is delayed, in my view, is the big thing. Is there's everything that has to do with economic growth and jobs. There's nothing on that front. But again, this is 4 months of making some reforms to stabilize the country, stabilize the economy. And during these 4 months, there has to be a negotiation for growth and jobs and jobs programs for the entire continent. I mean, we don't have the means anyway to finance any job program, or this has to be passed through the central bank.
Michael, why don't you stay for 1 second? We just have a couple of other questions.
Yes.
If you could. And we'll be back on World Crisis Radio. Welcome to the second hour of World Crisis Radio. Here it's Friday, the 27th of February. Now we've got a couple of more minutes left with Michael Chiotinis in Athens. Michael, I have to ask you: every international cable TV program that I've seen is playing up the fact that a group estimated by them at 450. But it looks to me like black bloc anarchists have burned some cars and smashed up some shop windows there in Athens. And then we also have this chorus of ultra-lefts. The Russians showed a filmmaker who says this is no good. And of course we've got, Max Kaiser, with personal insults to Varoufakis. I was surprised. And Kaiser whining that this was a kowtow to Merkel. This is coming from somebody whose only question is, you know, the question I would ask him is, are you short the euro, right? Are you trying to advance your own investments with this hysterical panic propaganda?
Yes, of course. Those are people investing in the breakup of the euro. Many political forces have invested in this. And there is a small part of Syriza that has invested in the breakup of the euro, or at least Brexit. They support the government, but they believe that we might have a greater freedom of choice of a policy under a new national currency, but. The fact is, the Varoufakis line is respected for now, and the thing is with the Varoufakis, he says we shouldn't think like Greeks, we should think like Europeans, and in my view, that's the correct view. We had today a demonstration, peaceful demonstration by. The KKE, the Communist Party of Greece. I didn't even see this, this thing you were saying about the anarchists. There were a couple of cars destroyed in a notorious neighborhood for this kind of activity. Nothing. It's absolutely nothing. It's part of everyday life in a way. There may be 10 people or 20 people going around smashing things. They may be crazy. There may be ideologues or
this, to me, this looked like a photo opportunity organized by NATO intelligence. That's what I could see.
Yes, double agents giving, fanaticizing some ideologues and having a few 10 or 20 crazies. It's really overrated, not just overrated, it's ridiculous. It's simply ridiculous. The main thing is the Communist Party had a demonstration today, a fair demonstration, not in the way that that Syriza is, not the people that Syriza can summon, but some people, and they demand, I don't know, the complete change of everything that has been done during the past 5 years. It can be done in 5 days. It's 5 years. It's 5 years.
Let me just, what we discussed off the air, right? The monumental, right, the classic example of a transformation is Franklin D. Roosevelt's 100 days. Hey, 100 days is 3 months and a week or even more, right? So the New Deal was too slow. Hey, it took 3 months. And now these people are out there whining. They're just, that is infantile leftism, an infantile disorder.
Yes. Also, we have, for the big things to set in, we maybe have to wait until the autumn. We have to wait until fall for some other countries to change government.
And that's what I wanted to ask you. Do you have any idea who might be next? I'm looking maybe at Portugal. Is there a possibility there? Spain? That might change too, but unfortunately we have that answer from Iglesias where he says he really does not support the debt write down, right? The debt haircut.
It's not a matter of whether you support it or not. It's going to happen. Debts that can be repaid won't be. I mean, and no one wants to break up the euro.
Except the British and the CIA.
Yes, the British are the only country that had a ministerial council about a possible Brexit with the British government, which doesn't concern them anyway. But you see the way they're planning. They were supporting Syriza, hoping that Syriza is going to bring a Brexit. But there's nothing of that on the table right now.
Precisely. What I heard at the time of the election was the only exit that Syriza wants is the exit of Samaras from politics, and that's it.
Yes, of course, because as I told you before, they don't have a reason to exist anymore, these guys.
Okay, last question then. What's coming up? It looks like the action now shifts into the parliament to get some of these things passed. And what else can you see on the horizon now?
These four bills are coming next week, and it's kind of fast. Anyway, because the parliament started a week ago, it's not as fast as you might think. The government started existing the next day of the election, but the parliament was summoned later on, and this week is the actual time that legislative work can be done. This was the first week. It's some other works had to be done. And now we have clear legislation. And of course, we were waiting for a deal from Europe to give us time. This is the main thing to do. And this is what Varoufakis got from this. Time. Time is very important right now. And we need time to legislate. And I'm saying, I'm always saying, start legislating. Just pass the bills.
Very good. Yes. Pass a bill. Okay. Michael, thank you again. We're really thankful you keep everything on an even keel. You know what's happening. These other people, Max Kaiser, he has absolutely no idea. And these infantile ultra-lefts, these people are really beneath contempt. So, we're looking forward to talking to you again next week and just about every week from now on. Hope you can stay with us, and we'll see you soon.
Thank you very much.
Okay. So now, shifting gears. So now we'd like to go to key man in the defense of Reverend Pinckney, that is to say the spokesman for the Pinckney family and a very important and interesting figure in his own right, Larry Pinckney, a veteran of the Black Panther Party, former university instructor in political science and related themes. But what we're hoping for now is to get at least find out what actually occurred in the Berrien County courthouse. So, Larry, welcome.
Yes. Well, thank you, Webster. It's a pleasure. It's an honor.
We'll be back. I'm so sorry. The music, that's a hard break. We'll be right back with Larry Pinckney. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. And we're going to now get the promised report that we tried to bring you in our previous segment, and that is Larry Pinckney, the spokesman for the Pinckney family, bringing us up to date on what has happened at the Berrien County Courthouse this afternoon, 27th of February, 2015. Again, Larry, welcome. Sorry about our automated system, but please,
give
us the lowdown.
Okay, now, this information I received approximately 20 to 25 minutes ago directly from one of our Central Committee members who was there at the courtroom, the courthouse. Let me give the details. One, there were two major motions that were put forth, and they both were essentially denied by the judge. One motion had to do with Reverend Edward Pinckney being released on appeal bond. Of course, he should have never been in prison in the first place. That motion was denied, I repeat, was denied, according to our Central Committee member who was right there. Secondly, the judge refused to change the really bogus charges / convictions against Reverend Pinckney to misdemeanors. The convictions, charges that were brought against Reverend Pinckney, were felony. And first of all, he did not commit, these actions, period, be they, felonies or misdemeanors. But what is of primary importance here is that he never should have been charged with or under a felony statute. In other words, charged with felony. The judge refused to change those bogus charges, the convictions against Reverend Pinckney to misdemeanors, which in fact they are. I can't say that I'm surprised. This is Berrien County, Benton Harbor, Berrien County, Michigan, Mississippi, as I call it. So
nice.
That's, now one more thing. It was requested, that the judge allow Reverend Pinckney to be if he's going to be confined, at least let him be confined in or near his home in Benton Harbor, Berrien County, Michigan, until the next court hearing. There are two more motions that need to be heard. The judge refused this as well. He refused to allow Reverend Pinckney to be confined or kept near his home. I want everyone to understand that Reverend Pinckney, they've put him up in what I call the Siberia of Michigan. That's Marquette, northern Michigan, 9 hours from his home, etc., etc. So we're talking about a very deliberate effort to silence Reverend Pinckney, keep him away from the people, keep him away from his family, keep him away from organizers on his behalf. The judge claimed that he had no latitude to order that Reverend Pinckney be confined in an area or a place much nearer to Berrien County. This, of course, is a patent prevarication. The judge has ultimate latitude to direct the prison system to keep Reverend Pinckney wherever the court decides. So these are the three main areas at this point in time. Mind you, please keep in mind that there are two more motions which need to be heard. I'm not exactly sure that it has even been determined when those motions are going to be heard. So Reverend Pinckney is going to have to be back in court, whether it's a week or two, a month, or whatever from now. We will certainly update you and give you that information as we learn it.
Well, that's the continuation of this frame-up, this railroading, this selective and vindictive prosecution, overreaching, overzealous. And here, this is now Judge Sterling Schrock is
right.
Still the guy doing this, right? And this is a day of infamy for the U.S. justice system, so-called, right? It's usually bad, but this is a new low. And we did get this opinion. You probably heard it, right? Some lawyer with some significant experience in the criminal defense field feels that the strategy of the prosecution here and of this court, which is part of the company town apparatus, is simply they hope that we're going to get demoralized and that we're going to quit and we'll dry up and blow away and they can continue to run their company town. But of course, this we cannot allow. And I'm sure
that's right.
You're already thinking of new things.
Yes, yes, I can assure you of that, Wester. I can also assure you that the politicizing of people, the informing of people, is going to get larger and larger and larger. We are not going to go away. Reverend Pinckney's case and struggle, and not just Reverend Pinckney, but what's happening in Michigan, in Benton Harbor, and in Detroit, is really all over the world, and it's going to get bigger. And we are not backing down. It is time for everyday, ordinary, black, white, brown, red, and yellow people to take our destinies in our own hands. Obviously, we have a corporate-controlled government, a corporate-controlled judicial system, et cetera, that is bound and determined to keep doing all that it can to keep us controlled on a plantation, as I say. Let's be honest. This is nothing but a plantation. The only difference this time is all of us on the plantation of all colors.
It's a sad day, but the other thing that always occurs to me is that this is now shaping up as an international cause célèbre. I was at the Russian embassy here in Washington this past week, and one of my principal themes in talking to people was that old adage, right? If the State Department says Navalny, or if the State Department says human rights in any form, the answer of Russia and many, many other countries, the Holy See, China, you name it, anybody in Latin America or Europe, that answer ought to be Pinckney, because that is the massive hypocrisy and vulnerability of this U.S. Establishment, right, is that they do things that, are right up there with the worst that's done in any foreign country you can name.
That's true. And unfortunately, instead of getting better, Webster, it is becoming much, much worse. And I always say this because I have to be crystal clear. I do not believe that the people of this nation live in a democracy. We live in what I call a hypocrisy. It's a hypocrisy. It's a corporate plutocracy. Everyday ordinary people of all colors, of any color, do not control our government. They do not control we do not even control our daily existence. So, yes, as the Russians would say, no, no. So,
okay. Larry, we'll see you next week. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Take care. Stay strong, brother.
Hopefully we'll get some better news, but we're gonna be with you. Back in a minute on World Crisis Radio. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. This is Webster Tarpley here in Washington, D.C. Now, we've gotten the main facts on the Pinckney hearings held today in St. Joseph, Michigan, Benton Harbor area, but the Berrien County Courthouse. But now there's another dimension to this in the sense that Reverend Pinckney has received interest from perhaps an unexpected quarter, but it does indicate a rapidly growing concern on a broader front about this monstrous miscarriage of justice. So for this, we want to bring in a person who has played a role second to none in assembling and guiding the legal defense of Reverend Pinckney and also the political side of that. It's Daniela Walls, the chairwoman of the Tax Wall Street Party, and she's going to tell us about some other aspects of the proceedings today. So welcome, Daniela.
Hello, Webster. You just told me during the break that all motions were denied.
All motions denied. No, no, he can't be free on bail. He can't have these felonies made back into what they really are, which is misdemeanors. And of course, he's innocent anyway. And not even the courtesy of staying in the Benton Harbor area. Got to go back to Marquette all the way up there in the North Pole.
Yeah, so this is going to be a tough 10 minutes for me to get through because I don't want to shed a tear about it. Sorry. I have breaking news that the ACLU came to our defense this morning. Before I tell you exactly what the ACLU did, I got to give some key back points or else it might not make sense.
Please do. Take your time.
So today was not an evidentiary hearing on the juror issue, but to consider the two other motions that they apparently denied. I didn't expect them to get denied, so I'm a little disoriented, but today our lawyers were supposed to argue the legal sufficiency of the evidence and try to get Pinckney, you know, the hell out of Marquette by getting him bond posted. The judge sets bond based on certain criteria like flight risk, right, connections to the community, and seriousness of the charges. Connections to the community means if the judge is trying to determine what type of flight risk Reverend Pinckney is, the more connections to the community he has, the better, and the less flight risk he is. Meaning we have to show things like he has a house, he and his wife has ties to the community, and he has a ministry in the community.
He's got a congregation. He's the pastor of a large, important congregation of people there. So he's not going to, you know, abandon them, no.
Right. Then there's the seriousness of the crime charged. Here it comes into play, like, was this a violent crime? And it was not a violent crime.
No.
They were supposed to rank this as low in the sense that it's not a violent crime, but I don't know exactly what happened there.
We got the usual flim-flam from Sepik and Judge Schrock.
Exactly. So the big criteria they were supposed to determine was whether he was going to flee the jurisdiction. And we were saying that, you know, the burden was on us to prove he had all these connections. So we didn't think we'd have a problem with that. The lawyers tell me that it seems to them, or it seemed to them, right? Because I just spoken on the phone with lawyers, that he was obviously a low flight risk. They could put an ankle bracelet on him today and mandate those intermediate measures. But, you know, the only thing that could be against this, and I guess that's what happened, was them saying, oh, well, this is a felony. You're facing 10 years. Given that this is a significant sentence, you know, we feel like you're a flight risk, so you're going to go back to prison and we're going to deny you the bond. So I have a lot of legal notes here.
Now, why don't we get to the ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union. That's the novelty. Tell us that.
Okay. So the American Civil Liberties Union submitted to the court for the hearing today. The ACLU filed a brief in support to grant the motion for bond pending appeal and to give him a new trial based on the fact that Pinckney should have been charged as a misdemeanor, not as a felon. I posted the entire ACLU brief at freepinckney.wordpress.com on the homepage along with the other pleadings. The ACLU has now briefed the misdemeanor felony issue better than Pinckney's original lawyers did. I'm going to read the three-line intro. It has ACLU letterhead, and it says, "Dear Clerk of the Court, enclosed you will find an original copy and one copy of motion of the American Civil Liberties Union of Michigan for leave to file an amicus curiae brief and brief in support. You will find the certificate of service on the last page of the brief. I will post this." That's the introduction. And then they've got the other precedent-setting case. And let me keep going. So there's no doubt. I want to say one thing really quickly. There's no doubt that the ACLU came forward because of activism, The ACLU cited something pivotal. And this is different than we knew before. Mike Sepik, the prosecutor, argued that he had the discretion to prosecute Pinckney under a felony or misdemeanor. He did not have that discretion. The ACLU's brief says this argument has been rejected because the precedent set in another case in a neighboring district, because of that case, they say that this case they include is legally identical. The Michigan Court of Appeals in the other case determined that falsifying a date on an election petition must be prosecuted as a misdemeanor. They say the unanimous opinion was rendered less than 3 months ago. So they are citing this new case law that says this is a misdemeanor. And our lawyer, Jeffrey, says their arguments were directly on point. Our lawyer says their felony misdemeanor filing looks like a slam dunk, or so we thought, because the Michigan Court of Appeals issued a case just 3 months ago on the exact same issue. There should have been no argument that the prosecutor, Sepik, had any discretion to prosecute this as a felony. Mike Sepik knew about this precedent-setting decision by the Michigan Court of Appeals. So his argument that he could prosecute Pinckney as a felon is 100% wrong. The ACLU attached a case, that case, in their brief, which, again, you can read at freepinckney.wordpress.com. And if we have a little more time, I'm going to summarize the brief because it's legal language.
We have very limited time. We just have to the end of the segment.
So their arguments were that he deserves bond pending appeal, and that has to be granted. That he's not a flight risk, he's not a potential harm to the community. Then number three was the substantiality of the appeal. This means how likely it is that he will be successful on appeal. Certainly at worst, we determined that this will be neutral, and then the risk of proper administration on justice, which is right now at this time amorphous to me. So that's what I've got on the case, and I'm sorry if I was disoriented and sad.
You were not disoriented in any way. You are a key person in this defense. Of course, you always have to hope for the best and prepare for the worst, right, dealing with this kangaroo court system that we have here in the United States.
I know, which is so pretentious
and arrogant and so forth. But look, this is a big political success, at least in the medium run, right? Maybe today it was a loser, but the fact that the American Civil Liberties Union comes forward, that's a big political shift. That's
because of the RT appearance, I believe. I've heard rumored that that's what alerted them to what was going on.
Okay, well, then we can say we sort of helped it along, right? Because when Larry Pinckney, that we've just heard from, when he appeared on the Abby Martin show, correct?
Yes.
And, of course, it's also been on Lee Camp on RT.
Yeah, my family.
And it's been on, thanks in large part to you, it's been on Truth Out. It's been the Black Agenda Report has done yeoman service and so forth. Mm-hmm. So this is, again, it's going to be a cause célèbre. It's going to be a huge international scandal. And there was a lot of interest, say, at the Russian embassy among people from a number of countries, including the Arab world, let me say. And we'll have more about that.
Webster.
Okay, see you next week. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio, our final segment. So let me appeal to everybody to redouble your efforts on behalf of Reverend Pinckney. And one way you can do this is to visit that website, the one closest to Reverend Pinckney. It is bhbanco.org, as in Benton Harbor, B-A-N-C-O. It stands for Black Autonomy Network Community Organization, working for economic and social justice in Southwest Michigan. And there's a PayPal there. You see the webpage, bhbanco.org. You'll see on lower right-hand side of the screen, donate with PayPal, make a contribution. Remember, we did get this interesting analysis from an experienced defense attorney who said the case that Sepik and Schrock and company have perpetrated on the public is so weak, so riddled with selective and vindictive, you name it, right? Somehow he thinks he can make a misdemeanor into a felony. That's like saying, parking ticket, 20 years in jail. It's ridiculous. This is not the rule of law. This is the logic of the company town, of the Whirlpool company town, and the Upton clan, right? The Fred Upton operation. They're the family oligarchs who own Whirlpool. So the only hope to impose that is for the opposition to cease, for us to dry up and blow away. We will not do it. We will not allow it. We will continue to fight this. So bhbanco.org, and please go to the PayPal there, and that goes right to Reverend Pinckney. Accept no substitutes. Unfortunately, when events like this occur, I don't know if it's case that's that guy has media interest, you know, somebody like Al Sharpton or others show up and they use it for self-promotion. Watch out in the sense that there's a group of people who are trying to use the Pinckney case for their own self-promotion for a relatively obscure and mediocre magazine publication about the conditions of austerity in the world. It's not worth reading. And these people, nevertheless, are trying to get people who come forward interested in helping Pinckney to essentially hijack them and turn them into workers for this austerity survey or whatever it is. And it's just this does not help Pinckney. It actually detracts from his support. Now, concerning Syria, a couple of interesting things here. A lot of attention for ISIS this week. Let's remember, if it were possible to get these European and U.S. and Japanese aid workers out of that area, the only way, by and large, that people have fallen into the hands of ISIS and then being executed or beheaded, the only way that has happened is if those people either willingly put themselves under the control of the Syrian terrorist rebels, or if they put themselves so close that they could no longer be defended. Now, there's a group of French members of parliament, members of the French National Assembly and the French Senate, who went to Damascus and had talks with President Assad. I'd like to see some Americans with that much guts, and I don't think we have them. I think we've got a bunch of parliamentary cretins, quite frankly, when it comes to this issue. They're too afraid to go over there and explore with Assad what the way out of this is. And here's the secret. The way out of it is to work with existing governments. Yes, and that means Assad. You got it. And all of those careers of the humanitarian bombers, the people like Ken Roth, I think it is, of Human Rights Watch, and the Amnesty International people, all these NGOs, the non-governmental organizations, are all massively invested in the idea of bombing Assad. That's what it comes down to. This is absolutely unacceptable. So we need to get some members of Congress with some guts. And it's also interesting that establishment people of some importance, the former Prime Minister François Fillon, F-I-L-L-O-N, this was under Sarkozy, if memory serves. So he says this is a good idea. And Bernard Squarcini, he also says it's good to have these contacts. Yes, as Cardinal Richelieu once said, you should negotiate with everybody all the time as much as you can, and you will learn more. Now, we've also got the Fars news agency in Iran. I once visited their headquarters, very nice bunch of people. And the Fars news agency reports that British transport aircraft, right, British planes have been making airdrops of weapons and other strategic material to the ISIS terrorists, to the ISIS terrorists. And there's also an idea that U.S. planes are also involved. So you've got a war, in a sense, of two tentacles of the U.S. government, right? The Pentagon bombs them, but the CIA and the other parts of the intelligence community are hyping ISIS. Why do people get interested, you know, people in Brooklyn or schoolgirls in Scotland, why do they get interested in joining ISIS? Well, part of it is the constant hype from the news media. They're so sophisticated. They're so formidable. They are supermen with magical powers. And the other thing that any self-respecting, intelligent person would ask is, with the tremendous capabilities of the National Security Agency, we're told that they sponsor the most feared and potent group of hackers in the world. Why don't they shut down those ISIS sites? If the main weapon of ISIS is a propaganda film that shows how cool and groovy and so forth it is to be part of ISIS, well, why not destroy those websites? That could be done in a few days. Why are you allowing these people to be recruited, right? You could easily justify that as a war measure. Now, we're of course, looking forward here to Netanyahu coming next week, but perhaps more, even more on ISIS. One interesting opinion from David Sanger of the New York Times, not reliable on many issues, but one interesting thing is the films of the vandalism, literally vandalism, the ISIS patsies and crazies taking a sledgehammer to these statues of the, I guess it's the Gilgamesh period, or maybe Gilgamesh is a little bit earlier, but the Babylonian and related civilizations of Mesopotamia, those are being attacked by ISIS. Why are they doing that? Why do they do so much? Is obviously, according to Sanger, in the U.S. intelligence community, there's the analysis that this is a provocation designed to goad the U.S. into overreaching, into self-destructive behavior, right? 150,000 men in the field. Well, it's not going to be that big because those resources don't even exist anymore. But in this sense, somebody like McCain is a precious ally to those ISIS people because he's saying, look, he's screaming, I'm ashamed of my country. I'm ashamed of my president and myself. We've got to attack. And of course, what he means is bomb Assad. So this week we've got RPAC, Reactionary Political Action Committee. We'll get to that next week, and we'll see you on World Crisis Radio.